Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, Addicted to Busy, your blueprint for burnout prevention. Our guest today is Paula Davis Lack, a former lawyer and a writer, speaker, media contributor, and a burnout prevention and stress resilience expert. She has taught and coached burnout prevention and resiliency skills to thousands of professionals around the world. She is the founder and CEO of the Davis Lack Stress and Resilience Institute. This session will explore what burnout is, what causes it, and the warning signs you need to look for. We'll be sharing highlights from today's call on Twitter. You can follow along and join the conversation at Penn Women, at Texas Women, at Mass Women, and in California at hashtag LeadOnCA. And a reminder, today's class will be available as a podcast on your conference website. If you registered through Eventbrite, you will receive an email telling you when the podcast is available. And now, Paula Davis Lack, welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be chatting with everybody.
Good. Well, we have a lot of questions, and I think we're just going to dive right in. And what I want to start with is, in your work, what do you mean by the expression addicted to busy?
So that's really the phrase that I started to use after I burned out toward the end of my law practice. And I wanted to try to more fully understand what my burnout was about. And as I started to read and dig and look at research and, connect with different experts, I was realizing that a lot of this seemed to center around our busyness. And I started to think about what is sort of going into that. Because, I said all the time to my friends, hey, how are you doing? I'm busy. How are you? I'm busy. You know, that's just sort of kind of the canned answer that we tend to give each other these days. And really discovered that, there are very specific things that are driving that in our culture. And it's things like information overload. We've got so much information coming at us, and our devices are these wonderful, great things that, help us do our work in a more efficient way. But we haven't put any boundaries around how we use them. And so I know a lot of people who find themselves up at all hours of the night sending emails and responding to emails and doing various work type items. We're also very distracted and disconnected. So some of that comes from the information overload piece, but some of it too is that we're connecting more on social media rather than actually having sit downs and lunches with really close friends like we used to. Some of it too is just the way the workplace is run. A lot of workplaces still think of workers in a way that, they expect endless hours and FaceTime and show up even when you're sick and it's a badge of honor, type mentality. And we all really buy into that. I certainly did. And my goodness, for everyone who's a parent out there, I think our culture has set such a high standard for parents today. So it seems like just so many of the parents I know are just either rushing around doing a million different activities with their kids. A lot of the moms and dads who I talk to and work with feel like, man, I've got to do everything. I've got to do it perfectly. There's this really, tough, high standard for me to meet. And if I don't meet it, man, I'm just so worried and so fearful that, my kids aren't going to end up, at the right college or with the best future that I envision.
Well, I think a lot of us must recognize ourselves and people we know in that description of addicted to busy. So is that the same as burnout, or what is the relationship between addicted to busy and burning out?
So I'm not sure that there's necessarily a relationship. I just think that some of the addicted to busy pieces might contribute to or fuel some of the burnout that I see. And so really the burnout that I tend to work with and the true definition in the research behind burnout really focuses on the work-related aspects of it. Now, I certainly think that, based on what I just talked about with our busyness and rushing around, can you be a burned out parent? Absolutely. Can you be a burned out caregiver? Of course. There are a lot of people who are taking care of aging parents and relatives that are probably experiencing what we know to be burnout. But a lot of my focus in writing and teaching really talks about burnout as something that's tied to work.
And what are some warning signs of burnout? How do we know when we are in danger of fizzling out?
Yeah. So there's really something called the big three. So the big three dimensions or drivers of burnout are exhaustion, and again, it's chronic exhaustion. This is not, hey, I'm waking up one day and I feel really tired or I've had a really tired week. It's chronic exhaustion. Cynicism, so everything and everyone is rubbing you the wrong way is how I define it. Clients and colleagues and friends and family members, who used to give you a little spark of joy are now not necessarily giving you so much of a spark of joy. And the last big of the three-dimension big drivers is something called inefficacy. So feeling like we're not able to achieve the goals that we want to achieve and accomplish what we want to accomplish. So those are three big warning signs, but there are some other ones. So a lot
of
folks
who,
a lot of folks who I work with and teach and train have talked about how they feel just unplugged, disengaged. Like, I used to love getting ready for work on Monday mornings and I'd pop out of bed and it would be great. And now my pop out of bed is more of like a slow drop and thud out of bed. So that sense of feeling unplugged and disengaged. A lot of folks who are at various different stages of burnout sometimes report more illnesses. So they feel physically sick more. That was certainly the case for me. I started to get colds and illnesses more. People report headaches and stomach aches with more frequency. So definitely different physical symptoms and illnesses more so than usual. And then for me, one that I put a big star by is if you feel like every curveball is a major crisis. So you have this nice little stress sweet spot, I call it, and you can handle the things that are coming at you at work and at home, and now all of a sudden those little changes in schedule or changes in project or little hiccups during your day feel like they're just throwing everything completely out of whack. So all of those are really big warning signs for burnout.
Okay, good to note. Now, let's talk about the other piece of your work, and that is resilience.
Mm-hmm.
How do you define it, and how can it help you prevent burnout?
Sure. So resilience is an individual's capacity for stress-related growth. And the reason why I love that definition is because not only does it talk about the fact that, we're all dealing with challenge and stress and change and adversity, but there can be a growth aspect to it. So for me, it's not just about helping people bounce back to zero when they're in the midst of a stress or an adversity or a challenge, but it's what can we do to harness growth in the midst of all of that? So how can we get to a better point? And I know from personally, having developed my own resilience practice for myself really, really helped me get to the root cause of why I burned out. The root causes really helped me understand myself in a way that went, okay, I get how I'm wired now. And I see how that wiring really led me to burnout. Not only my own personal story, but just having gone through the research. I mean, the research is showing some really promising connections and links between resilience and helping folks manage stress, prevent burnout, lower anxiety, lower levels of depression. So there's a lot of great benefits for resilience.
Could you talk a little bit more, Paula, about the notion of personal traits and how that plays a role? What did you recognize in yourself?
So the first thing that I recognized is that I'm very much an achievaholic. I really thrive on achievement and accomplishment and hearing people say, man, you did such a great job, keep it up. I've been that way for a very long time. I can think of instances even, in grade school and high school where that's been important. So, and I think a lot of high achieving women are obviously wired to be very achievement oriented, and that's not a bad thing at all. We just have to recognize that sometimes in the midst of our achieving ways, we fail to put boundaries around our time and our energy, and then that can spill over into burnout. So that was the first part. The second part that I noticed is that I'm very much a people pleaser. So it's very hard for me to say no when people ask me for things. And so that's definitely been something that I've had to practice, saying no more frequently and then dealing with the emotions that bubble up. I feel very guilty when I say no. I'm feeling like I'm letting somebody down. And, you know, so just understanding that and figuring out how to deal with that. And then the last thing that I recognize is I'm very much a perfectionist. I like things to be done a certain way. I have a very high standard, and that's not bad at all either. But when you sort of get to the level of perfection, everything has to be perfect, that's where it can become a problem. And there are actually studies showing that perfectionism is a personality trait that can be a driver of burnout. So those are really the three big things that I zeroed in on.
Okay. I'm wondering also for our listeners, if you could just one more time define resilience.
Sure. It's a person's capacity for stress-related growth.
Okay.
So how do you handle all of the stresses that are coming at you in a way that's going to maybe make you a little bit better at stress and grow from the adversity that you're experiencing?
Now, I know you also talk about stress resilience. Is there a difference between the resilience you just defined and stress resilience?
There's not a big difference. And really, stress resilience is just my own phrase for this very specific brand or type of resilience that works best to prevent burnout specifically. So the only layer that's added in my stress resilience model is that piece that's going to help you deal with that exhaustion, cynicism, and inefficacy. So that's really the only difference. But it's a critical addition or layer to have if you're talking about resilience that helps prevent burnout.
Got it. And what are some skills or strategies that people can use to build their resilience to stress?
Sure. This is one of my favorite questions, and I've written extensively about this from my teaching and training. So there are longer skills that are better suited for more of a workshop or training type environment, but there are a lot of really shorter type skills that I think people can start to incorporate. One is to increase your diet of positive emotions. And when I first learned about the research behind positive emotions, of course, I was the cynical lawyer who was, you know, just coming off of a burnout and finishing my law practice. And I thought to myself, why in the world do we need to study positive emotions? Negative emotions are what, you know, command our attention and really what we should be focused on and paying attention to. And really, we know, I mean, positive emotions really just change your chemical makeup. They help you produce more dopamine and other hormones that are really going to help to undo some of the negative effects that negative emotions have on us physiologically and psychologically. So we know that in order to sort of have this optimal level of positive emotions, we need to be experiencing positive emotions to negative emotions, if you think of it as a ratio, at about a 3-to-1 level. And when I heard that ratio first, I was like, oh man, I really have some improvement to do. And people can go to positivityratio.com, which is the website of Dr. Barbara Fredrickson, who's really the main researcher in this area, to find out where you are in your own lives.
Let's give that web address one more time.
Sure. It's positivityratio.com.
Positivityratio.com.
Yes. And what we know, too, is for really thriving, successful marriages, the research shows that that ratio bumps up to about 5-to-1. And for high-performing work teams, the ratio goes just a little bit higher at about 6-to-1. So definitely something to think about in your own life. And one of the strategies that I like best to sort of help kind of increase your diet of positive emotions, if you feel like you need more of that, is to just pick a positive emotion and build a portfolio. So for me, I zeroed in on gratitude. It's one of my signature character strengths. And just decided that, gosh, when folks send me nice thank you notes or emails, I'm going to print them off, I'm going to save them, and I'm going to keep them in a little container. And it's so nice on days that I have in my business where I go, oh, man, you know, are things going right? Is this something that I should continue to do? You know, we all have those moments, you know, during our lives where we go, oh, wow. I just go to the portfolio, and those little reminders really, really help to give me a little boost when I need it.
Great.
So that's one.
Okay. Any others?
Another quick one that I love, especially if you're talking about needing just a quick boost of, you know, energy or engagement, is to change your passwords. So I first read about this and thought it was really an interesting idea. And it's really just about priming, which is a way to get your environment going in a direction that you want it to go in. So to change your password to reflect a goal that you might have. So if you want to take a vacation next year in Paris and you're saving money for it, you might say, make your password save for Paris. Every time you type it in during the day, it's a cue for your brain to go, oh, yeah, remember, we've got to take care of this or we have to do this.
I love that.
It's very easy to do,
yeah,
but really packs a punch.
Great. Now, would you agree, Paula, that women are more prone to burnout than men? And if that's true, why is that?
So the research suggests that men and women actually experience burnout at about the same rate. So it doesn't look like women are necessarily burning out at a way higher level or lower level than men. But the research does also suggest that there are some differences in the way that women experience burnout compared to the way men experience burnout. So women tend to experience that exhaustion layer first, and that exhaustion drives the cynicism that we talked about, and then the cynicism drives the inefficacy piece. And when women get to that point, by and large, on average, they'll call a timeout, and they'll say, wait a second, something doesn't feel right, I'm stuck, and they'll reach out for help, or they'll try and figure out what's kind of going on. And for men, they tend to experience the cynicism part first, which drives a lot of exhaustion, and oftentimes for guys, they just keep right on going. For a whole host of reasons, they aren't as adept at maybe calling that timeout to say, wait a second, there's an issue here, I've got to figure this out. So I found that interesting.
Okay. Now, how can people handle preventing burnout if the firm or company they work for fosters a high-demand, high-stress culture?
Sure. So high-demand, high-stress is just one piece of the burnout formula. Another really important piece is something that are called job resources. So having a lot of things about your work environment that are really motivational, that give you a lot of energy. So I know a lot of people in a lot of industries have a very demanding, very high job demand, high stress type of environment. But if they have enough of those job resources, oftentimes they're able to at least not get to so far down the burnout road. And job resources are things like feedback. I mean, it's so important if you manage an organization that you're giving your employees enough feedback. Leader support, knowing that your leader has your back, is super important. Anytime you can have decision, authority, or autonomy, control over how you spend your time, how you spend your day, what projects you're able to take, that's great. And then having high-quality connections with your colleagues. So really building those solid relationships is important, and that's another job resource.
Okay, well, here's a related question,
mm-hmm.
and that is, given the pressure that so many of us feel to perform and compete at the same time, what strategies can you give us that will help us, you know, stand out and live up to the competition, but at the same time building resilience?
Mm. So I think one of the biggest strategies that people can do is to foster their authenticity. Show up every day as who you are. And I say that because I had a really interesting experience with that throughout my law practice. So for a lot of different reasons, I just felt like I never really fit in the legal profession, and so I would show up every day as Paula the lawyer. I would leave the best of who I was at home, and I'd show up, you know, to my law firm and then to the organization that I worked at as who I thought a good lawyer should be. And a lot of that meant that I left the best of myself at home. So all of my kindness, you know, all of my gratitude, all of the things that really make me who I am, I wasn't really bringing fully to the table. And once I started to do that, and it took me a long time to weed through sort of why that was happening, once I really showed up authentically and started to speak to audiences authentically as who I am, it just completely changed things for me. So I think that's a really big thing for people to remember and pay attention to.
That's great advice. Now, sometimes a stressful environment can be beneficial. It can stimulate productivity. It can lead to creativity. How do you suggest people decipher when stress is productive versus when it's overwhelming?
That's a great question. And I think that's such an important message, especially with high-achieving women, to really punctuate and drive home, is that we want that. We want people to be, you know, challenged and working and achieving and doing all of the things that they want to do in life. And I think some of it just goes back to paying attention to those warning signs, those burnout warning signs. So over a period of time, are you noticing that you're not interacting with your clients and colleagues the same way? So one of the things that I noticed when I was about going through my burnout is that I used to be the person who loved going to have lunches with people and loved hanging out with friends and colleagues. And all of a sudden I was really like, man, you know, you guys just go have lunch. I need to just, you know, spend, you know, the half hour or 45 minutes in my office with my door closed just to feel like I was getting, you know, a little bit more peace in my day. So really paying attention to and knowing, are you starting to see some of those warning signs appear? And if so, as early as possible, just start to check in and figure out, well, what's different about my environment? Did I just get a promotion? Did I just, you know, volunteer for this really big project and that's taking more of my time? So really understanding how that's impacting what you're doing.
Okay. Now, when you're overwhelmed, and maybe we have to, you know, go back to your lawyer days, what are some of the coping mechanisms that were most useful for you other than ducking out of lunches?
So, and I wouldn't necessarily say that that was a useful coping mechanism at the time. What I really should have done, and what I eventually ended up doing was I ended up talking to my boss. And I recommend that for people who feel like they have the right type of relationship with their boss, because I think there's still a stigma about burnout. I think anytime you raise your hand and say, wait a second, you know, I feel really stressed out, you risk the perception of you changing in the workplace. And people might think, oh, geez, you know, she can't handle it anymore, or, you know, she must be weak, or whatever you feel like people might think about you. And so once I talked to him about it, we started to at least try to explore a different avenue for me. I was at an organization at the time, and for a lot of reasons, it just didn't work out. So that is actually a potentially healthy coping mechanism if you feel, again, like you have that relationship with your boss.
Okay. Now, for somebody recovering from burnout, what are the steps you recommend? How do you recover from this, you know, feeling and get back to a sense of, you know, happiness and feeling authentic again and being able to perform? How do you recover?
Sure. And it's a process. I think, first of all, it depends on where you are on the burnout spectrum. So one of the nice things about burnout is that it's very easily measurable. There's a phenomenal assessment tool that folks can use, and I have the ability to be able to give that to people. So if anyone is interested in just sort of understanding kind of where they are on the spectrum, that's the first part, because there is, you know, I'm just feeling a little burned out, and then there's the burnout that I had, which I had let go for too long, and I was starting to get panic attacks, and I was in the emergency room a couple of times. So then it's that level, which is different. And so depending on where you are, I think that's going to influence the level of, you know, how do I cope and get back on track with this? So I think the stress resilience piece that we talked about is really important. And just understanding that there are different components and different building blocks of that you can focus on. So one of the things, another easy thing that I tried to do, because I needed to reconnect with what is it that I've always loved to do. You know, we get so busy and we get so involved with our careers that we forget, man, what have I always really loved to do? So it's something called the list. I created what I call the list, and I just, you know, poured myself a glass of red wine one Sunday afternoon and just thought for a little bit. I was thinking, like, way back to when I was, like, a little girl, what have I always loved to do? And I just started to make a list of those things. And I'll keep that list on my bulletin board because it really started to inform what my next steps needed to look like. But that was also because I was quite burned out and felt like I needed more of a significant change.
Okay, and how do people know, or how can a person know when professional help is needed to recover from burnout versus some of the self-help tools that you've been describing?
That's a hard question to answer because it's so individualistic, but I think that if you are experiencing any kind of significant health issue, any significant kind of psychological issue, you just sensing that maybe you're depressed. For me, I was getting panic attacks. I ended up in the emergency room because my stomach aches were getting so bad. If you are noticing that there is something that's really different about your personality, I think those are all pretty big indicators that professional help is warranted. Or at least, you know, just reaching out to a therapist, your doctor, or some other healthcare professional to say, here's what I'm sensing. Can you help me, maybe point me to some resources or point me in a different direction?
And for supervisors, how do they recognize the symptoms of burnout in the people they manage? And how do you reach out to someone and express your concern and get them to a better place if you're
mm-hmm.
a manager?
Oh, that's such a great question. And I find, and this is a big part of my mission with this work, is that there's a lot of education that needs to happen in a lot of different levels in a lot of different workplaces. Because I think that the word burnout and stress tend to be used interchangeably. And what I hear from a lot of people who I talk to is they say, oh, you know, I talked to my supervisor and he said or she said, yeah, I'm stressed too. Just take a vacation. Just take Friday off and it'll all be fine. And that doesn't fix burnout. And there's actually some great studies that will back up that statement. So I think it's really supervisors getting an education in what is the definition of burnout, what are some of the warning signs of burnout, and really knowing the people who you work with. That can get hard in some organizations. I know I've talked to people who get a new supervisor every 9 months, and that makes it really hard to know the people that you work with. So that's, I think, the biggest thing. And anytime you can, as a supervisor, develop a sense of trust with the people who you work with, it's huge because it's going to make it easier for you to have the right conversation if you sense that one of your employees is burned out. You're also going to create an environment where your employee might feel more comfortable coming to you and saying, hey, I'm burned out. I need some help. Can we, you know, talk about a temporary different situation or what have you?
Great advice. Now, we have time for one more question, and this one came from a lot of people, and that regards technology. And you talked earlier about our gadgets. It's become such an invasive and integral part of our lives that it seems to erase time and distance, which can lead to an increase of expectations beyond the standard business day. I think almost every person can relate to that. How do you manage this kind of technology-driven stress and the expectations that go with it?
This is such an important question with such a complex answer because part of it gets to our workplace culture. If the culture of your workplace is such that the way we do things around here is we answer emails at 2 in the morning, you're expected to talk to your clients regardless of what time it is, day or night. That is difficult. It's going to be difficult to put any type of boundaries around the technology. It's going to accelerate burnout. It's going to accelerate literally being addicted to those devices. That is a hard one because I think it's really depending on not only your workplace culture, but what are your own beliefs about using technology? If you say to yourself, the only way for me to get ahead is to make sure that I'm responding to emails at all hours of the day. That's a thought that's leading to certain consequences, and you have to really start to assess your thinking about, is that really driving some success for me, or is that getting in the way? And maybe I won't see it getting in the way right now because I feel like I'm kind of managing my stress and doing everything fine, but is this something that could potentially be leading to burnout down the road? You might have a great work culture that is very much saying, you know, boundaries are important. We don't expect you to be emailing after 7 o'clock. You know, enjoy your family time, enjoy yourself, and go home. And if you're putting that pressure on yourself, again, kind of back to that achievement-oriented, people-pleasing, perfectionist type of wiring, then that's individual work that you have to do. But it's going to be tough if your culture, if the workplace culture demands that.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's very helpful, but that's really what it is.
A topic that could go on and on.
Yes.
That is all we have time for today. But for our listeners who'd like to connect with Paula Davis Lack on Twitter, you can reach her at Paula Davis Lack, and Lack is spelled L-A-A-C-K. Thank you, Paula, and thank you to our audience for listening to today's teleclass.
No, you're so welcome. Thank you.